Hey guys, welcome to the Delta Flyers. I'm your host, Garrett Wong, and of course, my co-host, it will always be Robert Duncan McNeil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys.
Hey. You wear blue a lot, man. You don't wear blue a lot. We already talked. Oh. Orange is huge. Oh. I like that color. That looks this good blue. On you.
Thank you, buddy. I put this on a little while ago because I was going to go mountain biking.
Yeah, that's where I thought you were.
I was going to go.
Yeah.
And I got up this morning early with a dog, went outside. It was freezing.
Oh no.
I was like, oh, well, I'll wait a little while until the sun, you know, kind of warms things up.
Yeah.
And I went back out to go mountain biking, got all ready to go. And it's colder.
Yeah.
It's gotten colder. I was like, no way. It's not worth it. I'll go in the basement and do a treadmill or something. Nope.
Well, it's cold here in Los Angeles. I'm visiting my parents right now. It is cold here.
Really?
Too. Yeah. So I go back to Vegas tomorrow. So we'll see what happens. If there's a cold front there, that'd be wonderful.
I think it's warming up here soon. I mean, Look, I'm so grateful for the weather where we are in Utah. You know, it's usually sunny. It's very mild. Nights are cool. Hmm. There's not much rain. I think they get like maybe an inch of rain a month tops, one rain shower a month. Like, we don't get a lot of rain, so I'm very lucky, kind of like California weather,
you know. Yeah, so. And I will say, I think we may have spoken about this before, but I'm gonna say it again, man. Utah snow, there's just something different, and it's so crazy because you
and fluffy and
yes
powdery.
But Utah is right next to Colorado, and Colorado snow and Utah snow, there is a definite market difference between the two.
Oh yeah,
so much lighter, so much fluffier than Colorado, New Mexico snow, any other states that border Utah. They don't have the same snow. And I have skied on all of those states. I've been to Taos, New Mexico. I've been to several resorts in Colorado, Utah. I've been to Snowbird. I've been to Deer Valley. I've been to-
It's amazing snow
it's
up here.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
and
it really
Alta,
is.
Alta is the only ski resort I know of. Maybe they've changed, but they never allowed snowboarders.
Yeah, I think Deer Valley doesn't allow snowboarders.
God, either, I love
unless
that.
Unless they've changed recently.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm sorry, all of you snowboard enthusiasts, but I sometimes when you're skiing, you just don't want to see any snowboarders. You just want to be on your skis and just deal with skiers only. So,
No, Utah's got amazing. People should come visit. It's a beautiful state.
Yeah.
There's lots of national parks and, great skiing and winter sports, and it's a beautiful state. It really is.
Are you west of Salt Lake, north or south?
I am east. Oh, I am
east.
Southeast of Salt Lake.
It's one direction I don't pick. Okay, south,
just
east,
slightly southeast. It's just under an hour from, 45 minutes to an hour to get to Salt Lake. 45 minutes to the edge of Salt Lake, and then an hour to the airport. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad at all, but it feels very, we love it here. We really, really very happy. And this area that we're in is, I think, one of the fastest growing areas in the United States in terms of new people moving in. It's really booming right now.
In your zone right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Even though most post offices and people don't have your address.
That's why they don't have my address in the postal service yet, because there's so many new houses, they can't keep up with all the new
properties
that are here. Like they keep adding,
and it's fairly remote. I mean,
I'm in a kind of a remote place, but I love it up here. It is quite remote, but it's but it doesn't feel remote, get to anything I need. And but it's super quiet.
Well, from your pictures that you've shown me, it doesn't look like there's anything around you. Like, I look at that and go, where are your neighbors? Like, why don't you, like, if you grow up in LA or New York City, you automatically assume you're going to look out your window and you're going to be able to see into the window of your neighbor, basically.
Yeah.
Right. And then your photos just look so remote. Like, you are on Mars or you're on another planet.
It reminds me of when Rene Aubergenois was alive.
Mm-hmm.
He and I love that man. He was such wonderful human being. Just, it's very sad.
Very sad. Yeah. Very sad. I remember when I saw the someone had posted that he had passed, and that's when I first saw it on social media. I actually started crying. I was at a restaurant and I lost it. So okay, so go ahead. What about Rene?
My point was Rene had bought a home up in Northern California near a place called, I think it's near Jerry Taylor's property.
Oh,
Sea Ranch or something, whatever that area is called.
Okay.
And I remember seeing photos of Renee's house, and it was just on this bluff and an open view. And I remember thinking, good for him. Like, what? He was actually an inspiration to me.
Really?
To look into living in this kind of place, because when I would talk to Renee about how much he loved his home up there, and they would get away and just find so much rest and peace and quiet. Yeah, Renee was part of the inspiration to come to a place that's more remote, but not totally remote, and peaceful and beautiful. And because I travel so much, I mean, you know, you travel too for doing convention work and life and all the things you do.
Mm-hmm.
I realize, you know, in the world these days with Zoom and the way that our business, you know, that entertainment has changed. You don't need to live in LA anymore.
That's
true. You don't need to be there. You really
don't.
That
is true. That is very true.
I was talking to Roxanne's husband, Eric, after we had done our interview. I texted Roxanne's husband because we used to ride motorcycles together. And I was like, hey, Eric, I hear you went through, you drove right past me in Utah, you know, good luck on the move. And then we ended up jumping on the phone for a while. And Eric, who is a casting director, a very successful, big casting director.
For many, many years.
For many years, has a company that's still very active and one of the biggest casting companies in Los Angeles. Eric says he has not been in a room with actors in a year and a half. And his business has changed now. He goes, I don't need to be in Los Angeles to be a casting director. I can do it from Nebraska, you know, or wherever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You could be anywhere. So
it is amazing. You should have started your text with him by saying, hey, I'm kissing your wife, I'm watching me kissing your wife on the episode we're reviewing, is what you should have started with.
Yeah, I should have.
But thank you to Renee for inspiring you, right?
Yeah.
There you go. We still think of you, and we miss you, and we love you, Renee, wherever you're at right now.
Absolutely.
So living around the world is possible now, and you don't have to be in Los Angeles, which is amazing, which is great, right?
And I would imagine that's true for a lot of businesses. You know, mm-hmm. I know it's true for television, the television world, because they're filming everywhere now. Los Angeles is not the center of the television production world, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be anywhere, and I bet that's true for a lot of businesses.
Yeah,
whatever, you know, if you're in finance or banking or computer software development or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
My father passed away last year as well. It was a rough year for losing people last year. My father died a little over a year ago, and he was remarried. His wife is named Patty. She's in the computer. My father's wife is a software development person. She has been living at the beach in North Carolina, working for a company based out of Atlanta, but working remotely for a couple of years now.
Yeah,
like, her business is all remote as well. So
yeah, and they've been talking about how, because of the pandemic and so many people forced to work from home, that now that people are used to working from home, and that a lot of companies are like, well, do we really even need them in the office any longer right now? It just seems a bit of lip service just to say, hey, come to the office. Why? Because
yeah,
we want you to be there like you were before the pandemic. Why? It doesn't really, you don't need me. You're used to having my productivity. As long as I get done what I need to get done today, it doesn't really matter where I'm at, right? Any longer. Because I guess the fear from employers is, well, if you're at home, you're going to goof off. You're not going to do it.
I think it's the opposite. I think for, you know, now that people are working remotely, they're working 24 hours a day. I find myself, you know, working on the weekends, working at night, jumping on Zooms, jumping on phone calls 24/7, which is, you know, I've heard of people who now in this new remote world have said at 5 o'clock, I am auto responding to all my emails, that I am done with work for the day and I will respond tomorrow.
Yeah.
But they've got to actually create limits because the remote work, you end up working more, you know.
That's crazy. So, so what these employers have feared, the exact opposite is happening.
you're getting
more productivity from your employees if they're at home. Yeah.
And you don't have to pay for the brick and mortar office for them to be, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's
saving money there too. Mm-hmm. So
big time. Big time. Yeah. All right. So this week's episode is Darkling. Darkling. Okay. For all of our listeners, Robbie and I are going to go watch the episode. We'll be right back. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus segment, What Do We Remember? Hey, everyone, we are back from watching Darkling.
Yes, we are.
My goodness. Right off the bat, Robbie, 1 to 10, what are you going to give this one? What are you thinking?
I'm going to give this, I mean, I'm conflicted here.
Okay.
Because in theory, I like the premise.
Yeah.
And I really thought Bob Picardo did a wonderful job in the episode. It reminds me in some ways of like Threshold, you know?
Yeah.
I felt like, you know, as an acting challenge, Threshold was great for me, but as an episode, I know a lot of people don't like it. And this is kind of like that for me. It's like,
okay,
I appreciated his performance. I appreciated the concept in theory, but I thought the way it all laid out in the end, I was like, eh, and there's a bunch of holes in it for me. But
okay.
I did think, I'll say, teleplay by Joe Manosky. I thought there were some wonderful scenes and moments in the episode, really wonderful stuff that Joe found.
Right.
You know, separate moments. I thought Alex Singer, our director, Alex Singer did a wonderful job. I think this may be his best work as a director.
Mm.
It was beautifully shot. It was staged well. It was, there was a lot of great moments directorially in it.
Yeah.
But I did, you know, after I watched it, I did a little Googling and I found a comment that said that this episode is the first of what's known as, to some fans, as the Trilogy of Terror, three consecutive episodes that are not considered very good.
What are they?
So it would be Darkling, first of the three. Then next is
Rise. Yeah.
And then next is Favorite Son, which I know is a big one for you. So some fans are kind of with me on this one, at least. I just kind of walked away from it going, it kind of was a little bit of a dud for me.
Okay.
So I'm going to give it a 5, maybe even a 4.5 out of 10, 4.5 or a 5.
Yeah. Okay.
Something like that. What about you?
Well, I always take longer to go through these episodes than you do. So I in essence rewind and in the recap or the rewatch, I end up really rewatching the episodes 5 or 6 times is what I do. And my first rewatch I didn't like it. I was like, oh no, what is going on? Poor Doctor fans, you know, this is like the worst Doctor episode ever, I felt in the beginning.
Yeah.
As I kind of watched it again, I really like the writing. And the story is by Braga and Manosky. The teleplay is by Manosky. So I like Joe's teleplay. There was some really, really great. And when we go through the recap, I'll point out the points, the areas that I thought, or the dialogue that I thought was so amazing. Because I did think that some of the...
Yeah, that's, I agree with you. I think there's some wonderful lines and moments that are really profound and deep. deep thoughts and big ideas from both the doctor and from Kes. I thought, you know, Kes had a lot of really profound dialogue and ideas.
Most definitely.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. But, some lessons to be learned from this episode for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start off with our poetry synopsis.
Yeah.
Why don't you give us your haiku?
Yes.
And I'm going to give you the limerick.
All right, here we go. The haiku for Darkling. Kes thinks she's in love. The doc enriched his program. Things got pretty weird. Yeah, that's it.
You sound like the French Stewart character from Third Rock from the Sun, Harry, when he went pretty weird. This is kind of how he talks. So. Okay, here we go. Here's my limerick. And by the way, I've narrowed it down. Whatever time that we've allotted for us to meet back up for the recording, if you add on 30 minutes, then we're good. That's pretty much what it is. It's always going to be 3.5 hours and not 3 hours that I'm
right.
gonna need. Okay. Because the half hour is going to be only for
limerick.
That's it.
Yes.
Okay. Here we go. My limerick for Darkling. Zaheer romances young Kes and makes her swoon. New subroutines turn the doc into a goon. He knocks out Zaheer, hypo sprays engineer. Fixed by Torres, his program can now resume.
Ooh. Nice. I think you capture the plot much better than my things got pretty weird.
I have more time. I have more syllables.
Yes,
I
have you do. More, you have a lot more. A lot more real estate in the limerick.
Yes, but the danger is when you select the first rhyming word, right? So basically, in limerick, the first two lines rhyme. The third and fourth will rhyme. First, second, and fifth will rhyme. Correct.
Yeah.
And then the third and fourth are rhyming. When you select that first rhyming last word, it locks you in. And if you can't find, you know, you might come up with this really cool first verse, but then the second verse, you're like, oh crap. And if you do find a good second verse, sometimes you can't find a third word that rhymes with the first two to wrap the whole thing up. It's difficult.
Limericks are hard.
I know.
All right. You're going to be done soon. We're almost done season three. We're getting there.
Good.
All right. So our guest stars were David Lee Smith played Zaheer. I thought he was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I totally get why Kes had an attraction and a fascination with him. I thought he was great. Stephen Davies as Nakan, you know, sort of the bad guy, the guy in the bar. Another guest star I want to point out, very important guest star who played the ensign in the turbo lift in scene where Paris showed up. She had three lines, I think. Was Sue Henley. That's the stand-in for Janeway. That was
Kate Mulgrew's stand-in.
Yeah. Sue
for the entire 7 years. Sue was there for the whole time. So
the whole time. Sue is awesome and had a wonderful little cameo, a role as the ensign in the hallway that almost gets taken by evil doctor.
Yes. Do you remember the buzz around when she was about to have her line? Yeah, because this was like front page.
Everybody
news
was so excited
on the Voyager Gazette. I mean, it was like, oh my God, Sue's got a line. Sue's got some lines. Sue's going to speak. And everyone was, especially Sue. Sue was jazzed. And the funny thing is, Robbie, I thought Sue's line came in season six, not season three.
It was three.
I didn't know. Yeah. Did you also notice Sue Henley is also in another scene in the very beginning? At the lodge, she crosses camera as an alien. That's her in the very beginning there. Yeah, no lines, but she's an alien there. So she's one of our regular background actors, as well as Kate Mulgrew's stand-in for the entire 7 years.
Well, it's funny. Yeah. You're right. I remember that now, noticing that there was Sue walking by.
Yeah.
And was she an alien?
Yeah, she was an alien. She had stuff on. And the funny thing was, she wasn't from the McCauley aliens. She wasn't like Zaheer's
race.
She was a different alien. She was another
race. It's weird that they would put her in the same episode.
As where she has the line, yeah.
The alien background and a Starfleet crew member. Very strange continuity choice.
For sure. And that's probably why they made her this alien that it was even more, had more facial stuff than Zaheer's people, right?
Yeah.
So Yeah, that's probably their way of hiding her.
Well, we open. Okay, so the episode opens in this lodge, in this bar, and we realize that we're at some outpost of the McCall Travelers, I think.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And these are these adventure types. They're like frontier, you know, individualists. They're out there on all these amazing adventures. And, you know, they're this loose group of explorers.
Yeah.
And they know this territory. So that's why we're there, to find out what's in front of us, what's ahead of us.
Janeway's captain's log, she says, they're a loosely governed race of explorers that has extensive knowledge of the territory ahead of us. So we need this information. And that's where we see, we open up inside the lodge, and Janeway is completely, focused
mesmerized
by
this story. And he's talking about this moon or this asteroid that they found, that in his story, he says, it turned out that this thing, it was a living creature, the entire asteroid, the whole thing was alive.
Yes.
And Janeway's never heard of such a thing, and she's wrapped up. And then Kes comes by with this handsome man.
Yeah.
She's been working with him to get some medical supplies and restock, you know, Voyager for some things they may need. And Zaheer hears this and he's like, I've been there and I've never heard, you know, we didn't detect any of that. So you already are getting a sense that these are like tall tale tellers, you know, that these people, you know, a lot of these people like Nakan tell big stories about adventures that may or may not have happened. So we know that we're not sure if we can trust him, but Zaheer, you know, Kes is very taken with Zaheer right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And he feels like we feel like he's a very trustworthy guy. This is Zaheer.
There was a really tense interaction between Nakan and Zaheer. Like when he kind of bends over to him and says like, do you challenge my right to travel and go freely? And so this is, now we're kind
of, it's almost like cowboy talk.
It is, but we now know a little bit about this McCall traveler people, this race, that, you know, there's certain things that they hold very dear, and obviously freedom to go anywhere is part of that, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, and there's something in their culture or their race where if you challenge that person, then you have to duel them or fight. There's like, something's going to go on. I mean, we're not clued into what's going to happen, but
you're right,
we're getting a little tidbit of that, right?
And that's important for Kes's story, because just to kind of take a big bird's eye view of it, Kes is really considering this whole episode about leaving Voyager.
That's right.
The big decision she's got to make. She, you know, is deeply attracted to this guy. We realize that in an early scene with the doctor coming up, that we realize that Kes and Neelix are officially done.
Yeah.
They talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big, this freedom to go where you want, to freedom to travel and do, you know, pursue anything you want to pursue is really important to these people. And that's very attractive to Kes at this point.
Hey, I have a name for it. It's the McCall Mantra.
Nice. Nice.
Oh my Lord. Okay. So now we're in the resort program, right?
Yes. We go to the holodeck, and there's Neelix and the doctor, and they're talking, and Gandhi is there. Lord Byron is there.
That's a good Gandhi. That was a great
Gandhi. He was
great.
Woo. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Gandhi is talking, and they're talking philosophy, and the doctor's taking notes.
Right.
And Gandhi's saying, you've got to temper your urges, and Byron is going, no, you've got to pursue passion.
Uh-huh.
And Doc's taking down all these notes.
Yes.
And he talks about, Kes arrives, and he talks about his personality improvement project. So we realize the doctor's on the holodeck studying all of these very, very famous people, Gandhi and Lord Byron. And he says Da Vinci, and T'Pau is there.
Mm-hmm.
T'Pau is
an Asian Vulcan.
Who becomes very important in Enterprise, the series, by the way.
Oh.
T'Pau becomes a very important character down the road. So yes, one of the most famous Vulcans ever.
Different actor though that played on Enterprise.
I think there may have been a T'Pau actress in Next Gen. There may have been one in the original series.
Okay.
I think this character has been popped up in a number of things.
Yeah.
But yeah. The
and you forgot Socrates. Socrates is sitting there next to across from T'Pol playing Calto, looks like, right? So, and he also mentions Madame Curie, but we don't see her. Madame Curie is somewhere floating around. So Doctor is just trying to integrate these character elements that he finds admirable amongst these historical figures. And he thinks that if their traits are integrated into his program, he will have a better bedside manner. He's just going to be a newer, improved doctor.
And in theory, it makes sense, actually.
It does.
In theory, all these super smart people, he's pulling from the greatest minds of all time. It sounds like the kind of thing, you know, I would do is like, oh, I'll read these great books and that'll make me a better person. So it's, you know, it's logical what he's trying to do.
That's logical.
And Kes shares that she's met this guy Zaheer and she's clearly infatuated with him. And the doctor notices that. And he basically thinks she's rebounding off of this.
Well, not only does he notice it, he already knows it. He knows that she spent all this time with this guy and he warns her the McCall are bad news, you know, and you're just affected by your breakup with Neelix and you just need a cold bath. In the words of Gandhi.
Just a cold bath.
Yeah.
Yes. He pulls a little Gandhi.
Yes.
We go to sick bay after this and we see the doctor moving around the bio bed and he's taking a look at B'Elanna because she's not feeling well. But I have to say, in the very opening shot as he's walking by that wall, I remember Marvin Rush fought with this issue for the whole run of the series.
Huh.
As you pan across those vertical yellow line, gold lines.
That yes, right by the clamshell.
It moray is the term, but it sort of distorts.
Okay.
And it was weird because as Bob is walking around, the doctor's walking around, there's all this weird halo around him of that moray, that distortion.
Mm-hmm.
But part of me was like, well, he's a hologram. That would be cool. Like, wouldn't that be cool if they had, even though it was a mistake, and I know Marvin fought with this all the time, part of me was like, oh, that would have been a cool thing to introduce as part of his, as part of his holographic reality, that he always sort of had a little bit of distortion around him because of the projectors and things like that. That could have been a cool thing, but
that is a cool thing. And so that's why they always say, if you're going to be interviewed on camera, never wear stripes because it will end up distorting the image. The camera just can't pick it up properly. So I have a question for you. What was Marvin arguing for? What was he trying to tell production that needed to be done? What was he saying?
Originally, I remember this conversation. Originally, he was like, these vertical lines, it's impossible. I can't fight them. He would try tricks like changing the shutter angle of the camera, changing frame rates. They would change the frame rate of, they try different light bulbs in there and all kinds of things. Because you've got these fluorescent lights. And the way that lights work is they sort of bounce out hundreds of pulses of light per second, you know,
right.
There's a rate to the way that the lights are flashing. Basically, we don't notice it with our eye, but the camera picks that up, and if it gets in out of sync with the lights and the lines, and it's just, it creates this problem. So Marvin would always try to limit the camera movement and things around that because it just, you can see it in your background. There's the There it is, right behind you, all those vertical lines.
Yeah.
In your background
right
now. It just
and they're kind of distorted.
Yeah.
A little bit. They're not perfectly straight. Yeah. So he would try to say, like, let's try not to shoot in that direction and just avoid
try to limit the camera movement and things like that. But in that opening shot, the doctor's doing a whole circle around the bed and it pans him over. So you've got
He has to move. You have to track. You have to track the doctor. Okay. I got you. Wow. I didn't know that discussion was going
on. That was
an
issue. Yeah.
Now that's an issue.
Yeah. So the doc's working on B'Elanna.
Yeah.
And he's acting very strange. It's almost like he's taken on the Lord Byron passion.
Well, kind of. I wrote creepy doctor. So I don't know about
strange. I wrote
strange.
Creepy too.
Oh, okay.
I wrote creepy too because he ends up touching her belly.
Oh my God.
Right in her belly and going, does that
feel good?
Feel good?
Yeah, exactly. It's completely sexual.
I love her line when she says, unless you want me to knock you into the middle of the next millennium, you better back off. And he goes, and he says, I'm going to review these additions to my program. I thought it was very funny.
I love the tweaks of dialogue from from regular 21st century cliche lines, like you would say to somebody, I'm going to knock you into the middle of next week. That's what we'll say, right? But then for Star Trek, Minoski tweaks it to say, I'll knock you into the middle of the next millennium, which is awesome. I love that line. Yes.
Yeah. Basically, B'Elanna says, you know, she's like, what? You've been messing with your program. You can't do that. You've got to be careful.
Yeah.
And she's telling him all this. And there's a great little two shot there. She's saying, you know, you got to be careful. You don't know what's going to react.
Can I read what she says? Let me read what she says. She says, behavioral subroutines have a way of interacting with each other that isn't always predictable. You've got to be careful or someone might hurt you. And then the camera pans down.
Tilts down.
Doctor's hand is on her leg.
Caressing her leg. He's like, oh yeah, okay.
Creeper.
Yes, he's creepy.
Oh my God.
Creepy doc. So we see the beginnings of a problem there. Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. And we go into the woods back on the planet. And Kes and Zaheer is they're walking through this beautiful forest and great beautiful planet.
Mm-hmm.
And she's talking about, you know, he's talking about these adventures he goes on, and she's like, that sounds amazing, but do you ever think about like a bigger purpose, what you'll leave behind? And he kind of says, no, I've never thought about that before, but now with you, I see the fellowship that you have with your crewmates, and I see that has value.
Mm-hmm.
Start to see these two sort of learning from each other and connecting, which
I
thought was great. There's also a shot behind them where we see three moons and kind of the point of view, the vista that they're looking at.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful shot. That's a vis effects wise. It's stunning. It's perfect.
Yes.
Beautiful shot.
One of the lines that I forgot to talk about that he had was right when he meets Janeway for the first time, back in the initial lodge scene that we see him. She says, he's introduced to Janeway by Kes. And Janeway says, pleased to meet you. And he responds with, returned. I love that line. He says, returned. Like usually someone says, yeah, great meeting you as well. But he says, returned. So just the style of Zaheer's speech. And the entire conversation between Kes and Zaheer walking through this mountainous trail, this bonding moment between these two characters, just the dialogue was.
Joe Minoski really found a philosophical approach to this whole episode dialogue-wise. Yeah. There was deep thinking and deep ideas, big, profound ideas about the meaning of life all throughout this episode, which I thought were really good.
My people are peripatetic by nature. We live for the excitement of facing the challenge of space alone. I mean, very simple line, but the use of, you know, peripatetic and just how it's constructed, I enjoyed his writing for sure.
Yeah, well, it's a great scene. Ends with them kissing.
Yes.
And
after he shows her the thing, why is he there? He's showing, he's taking her to show her this sort
he
of
shows
like
her this inscription.
Yes, this inscription, on a rock.
Which I loved on the rock because it had these like glowing sparkles.
Sparkly.
It wasn't just carved in. Yeah. It was almost like this.
This was a Star Trek sci-fi inscription, a futuristic inscription.
Very cool.
Right? And we have a saying, my course is as elusive as a shadow across the sky. And that's what that saying is, which is very poetic, very beautiful at the same time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store.
Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
And as he does it, he sort of, his hand glides across the inscription, this beautiful inscription, and it lands near her. And then she says, thank you for this.
And then the kiss.
And then the hands touch and then the kiss. And it's very beautiful. And we think it's all good, except that as the camera pulls back, we see there's a creepy figure.
A hooded character
watching them.
Spying.
A little bum, bum,
spy. Bum. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kes beams into the transporter room, and she is all aglow. Yes.
Yes. Her middle name is Glow. Kes, yes. Glow. Does she have a last name? She doesn't have a last name, does she?
I don't think so. Just okay. Kes.
Well, okay, she glowing. Is, let's just call her Glowing Kes.
Clearly, they have consummated in some way the moment after the kiss, because she comes in. And
you
and
think that, hey, wait. Do you think she had Nookie?
I think they did something that was
really
profound. Yeah.
No, I read it as she just had a really great makeout session. I didn't point of actual intimacy.
I don't know.
But if you think that they knew each other biblically, oh, that is your
I think that she was glowing in a way you glow after you've gone completely into the romantic activity.
Okay.
Even the extra, I can't remember who it was. It was one of our regular extras there.
Yes.
Even the extra kind of looks and goes, oh, yeah, I see what happened.
She got a good moment there. She got showcased there, you know?
Yeah. A lot of our regular background had great moments in this episode. We cut out in the hall and Tuvok's walking down and he sees Kes approaching. He says, computer, what time is it? It's 3 a.m. 0300. Kes comes up and he's like, hey, Kes, what's up? It's 3 a.m. You got a report due. And I got to say, I felt like, wait a minute. Are you my daddy? Like,
that is that,
are
yes,
you?
Yes.
Really, Tuvok?
Mm-hmm. Tuvok, yeah. If you think about it, he has counseled Kes in trying to focus her powers, her mental powers, you know, so he's basically served as a father figure for her in a way. He has, just like the doctor. I mean, I look at the doctor and Tuvok as either father/uncle figures, like, you know, definitely male figures in her life that are guiding her, right?
Yeah.
So, he is definitely acting like a dad right there.
Yeah. But she knows she's got this report due at 8 a.m. We go to sick bay and the doctor is also awake at 3 a.m. And he's working in the dark.
Yes.
And he says, he reminds her, in addition to the report, he's like, you know, you forgot your summary analysis report that was due from last week.
Yep.
And she's like, oh, yes. And and then he starts to say, you know, I've noticed you're increasingly unpredictable. You've got these swings of your moods.
Mm-hmm.
And she responds, you know what? Everybody is treating me like I'm still a child. I am nearly 3 years old now. If I'm attracted to someone, it's my business. And I had to stop. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Only in Star Trek.
This became an episode of Beverly Hills 90210 where they're talking to the parent is talking to the kids, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I love that though. She's nearly 3 years old.
Yeah.
Anyway, we go to the ready room. Kes is looking even rougher here than before, which I don't know if that was intentional or just, you know, but she's pulled an all-nighter.
Yeah.
And she talks to Janeway and she's like, I want to go on this adventure with Zaheer. I may leave Voyager. I may decide this is an opportunity I can't pass up. She says, I've already lived a third of my life. They live till 9 or 10 years old. She's almost 3.
Yep.
So Janeway says, I'll help you, you know, weigh your choices, weigh this decision, you know, your decision, but this decision is yours. And it does feel like we're moving towards Kes leaving Voyager in this episode.
It does. Let's not ignore the little tidbit of character development for Janeway. We do find out that Janeway was a procrastinator back in her Academy days. Putting off an important task until the very last minute, then rushing through it. She acknowledges that she was the master of that. So that's a nice little tidbit that we don't know about, you know?
Yeah.
Which makes me feel better as a person because I've always procrastinated my whole life. So, and they say procrastinators are perfectionists basically. Right. So, So yeah, so it does look like she's about to make her move away.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, and she's going to go on a bit of a test run by going with Zaheer to explore this Solaran rift, and then meet back up with Voyager. And Janeway says, "Well, you know, just take your time with this decision before you make the final decision. But that final decision must be yours and yours alone, Kes," is what Janeway says. Mm-hmm. Right? We jump to the lodge, and Zaheer tells Tuvok that he needs to avoid, or Voyager needs to avoid, the Tarkin. And the Tarkin are a race that are so powerful that they will basically hijack your ship and abandon your crew on some remote, you know, location.
Kind of pirates.
Similar, yeah, they're similar to what the Kazon did to us earlier, where they kind of marooned us on that really primitive planet, right?
Yeah.
At the end of Basics, at the beginning of Basics Part 1 and Basics Part 2. And so this is what the Tarkin are.
The Tarkin are, he says, near this plasma belt that you've got to go around.
Yes.
Tuvok is like, well, that's going to take us months off our direct course to the Alpha Quadrant. So he's very torn. He's, you know.
Yeah.
But obviously, again, it's saying that Zaheer is a pretty heroic guy. He's really giving them help, and he's an honorable, good guy. So he also says that he's in love with Kes, and he wants her to come with him, and he's going to keep her safe. Normally, it's every man for himself, but when they take that kind of commitment or responsibility in a relationship, that he will keep her safe.
Mm-hmm. And I wrote down in my notes that this essentially was Zaheer's plea, or Zaheer's pitching Tuvok as if Tuvok was the father. Like, he wants Kes's hand in marriage in a way, right? Because, traveling for the McCall travelers is basically, it's their life. So he's asking for Kes to share his life with her. So I wrote down he's asking Dad/Tuvok for Kes's hand in marriage here.
Yeah. The next thing we see is Zaheer out in the woods, and he's alone. He's he's by himself, and he hears someone.
Yes, he
does. And he calls out, and then suddenly he's sort of surprised and quickly pushed over the edge of this cliff.
Yes.
And he falls in slow motion, which I noticed, again. We don't normally do slow motion on Voyager. On Star
Trek. You don't see it.
We didn't use it a lot. And I thought Alex Singer, in directing this episode, did a beautiful job of doing things like that. Like, really, making these moments very cinematic and cool. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
As Zaheer goes down in slow motion.
Yeah. And shocking that he's being attacked by who, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the next scene, we're in the lodge.
We see the hooded guy over. We see the hooded guy that was tracking him before, and the hooded guy steps in the bar. Down comes the hood, and it's Evil Doctor.
Evil Doctor.
Yes.
Evil Doctor.
And he ends up grabbing the lodge keeper, Nakan. Yeah, he grabs Nakan and sort of forces him over by the fire and grabs his hand and shoves his hand into the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And basically says, you're going to help me. You're going to get me out of here. I need safe travel out of here.
Yeah. And he says, it's kind of weird. He says he needs a ship and passage off this world. Isn't the ship the passage off this world?
I think he means, like, you need to set me up safely, not just get out of here, but
I need to get out of here under the cover of night, whatever. Yeah. And he says, you need to arrange this, and kind of threatens him. Basically, I'm going to burn you or kill you if you don't do this. So,
Good. So we come back and we're in sick bay. And Kes comes in and, turns on the doctor's program. He appears and she says, Zaheer got hurt. He fell off of a cliff. He's injured. He needs medical help, medical attention. We need your help, doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor's like, great, sure, of course, I will come help. But this seems to be nice, doc, now. So,
a little
confusing. Like, wait, what's going on?
Yep. And just to clarify, Zaheer is not, he's no longer at the bottom of the ravine. He's at some emergency facility, some type of, medical facility with on the planet with a McCall physician who is in charge and is waiting for the doctor to come down to help assist is what's going on, right?
And the doctor's like, I can regenerate things. I'm good. Yeah. It's good. We have the technology. I'll fix this right up.
Yeah.
So we, we go into the transporter room next.
Mm-hmm.
And B'Elanna is there.
Mm-hmm. No, actually, B'Elanna's not there. They're about to head onto the into the transporter pad, and B'Elanna rushes in. B'Elanna yes. rushes in and says, like, hey, wait a minute. There's a problem with your program, doctor. I need to run a complete analysis of all the doctors, of all of your subroutines while they are running. So you got to come with me. And the doctor is, you know, he's like, okay, that's fine. Kes, you go ahead. You can handle it. You know, I'll be there mm-hmm. soon. So then they end up in sick bay, and Torres is basically debriefing the doctor on the fact that these dark threads that are running through these historical figures' personalities are going to affect his program in a negative way. And so she has found a way to sort of put a program in that will search for all these other personalities and mm-hmm. extract them from his program.
Purge all them, of these right? dark algorithms, all mm-hmm. of that stuff.
Yeah, and the only way this program can start running is if the doctor turns off his program. And so mm-hmm. as he tries to turn it off, he starts fritzing. And again, great job by Alex Singer. We don't see the doctor fritzing in. We just see the reaction on Torres' face.
Torres looking very, very scared, shocked. Yes. Or shocked.
Yeah, yeah.
And we cut away to the hallway where Tuvok and Janeway are talking and walking mm-hmm. down the hall. And he says, you know, they've analyzed the site of the attack, and they can't find any DNA evidence, which is very strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
There seems to be, it's as if no one was there.
Correct. Correct.
And they come around a corner, and the sick bay door opens, and there's B'Elanna lying on the floor by herself.
Right.
And they rush in. The doctor appears, and he blames it on the food, you know, the indigestion she was having before that he was.
Well, he called it delayed anaphylactic shock, which is hilarious because people that have anaphylactic or allergies towards foods, it's immediate. It doesn't, as far as I know, like they eat it and they've got to go to the hospital or get an EpiPen. But this is delayed anaphylactic shock. So she ate it and a whole day later, you know, so his explanation is a little faulty, I think. So
a little faulty, but it works. It works.
They believe him. They totally believe him.
Mm-hmm. I also, okay. So then they leave and we find the doc fritzing again.
Yeah.
And he sort of fritzes into evil doc.
Right.
Back to evil doc.
Right.
I just got to say, I loved the makeup department and what they did. They put in some contact lenses that just changed his view, you know, his face.
Yeah.
They put in some teeth or something I thought was very cool.
The lenses were interesting because his pupil is still the same color. It's just the very outer ring is that light color. That's what I noticed, right? And don't forget the whole reason why Janeway and Tuvok were walking over to sickbay in the first place was he had a tricorder which contained all the raw data from the forensic investigation on the attack on Zaheer. So that was why they were there. So he hands that over to the doctor saying, well, this is for your further analysis and we're out of here. And that's when he starts fritzing into evil doctor.
Evil doctor. Yeah. With that good, cool look.
And the facial twitch that he does, you know, it's like, oh, evil man.
Mm-hmm. He wakes B'Elanna up.
Yep.
And he gathers a bunch of hyposprays, first of all, like four or five of them.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the heck is he doing?
Yeah.
And he wakes her up and basically says he gave her ketylene to simulate anaphylactic shock.
Yeah.
So that's what happened when she had that look and we cut away. He must have given her ketylene or at that moment so that she passed out.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's given her these other hyposprays that have paralyzed her. So she can't move.
Can't move.
Yeah.
So
and
smart.
He's very rough with her. He throws her down. It gets very physical and basically.
And he's taken her comm badge. Remember, he's taken her comm badge off too. So.
Yep. And he basically says, I need your cooperation.
Right.
And he wants her cooperation because he wants her to delete good doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wants to be bad doc, evil doc.
Yeah.
And she's like, I can't do that. I can't delete one without the other. Like they go together. And, and she said, you know, you're destabilizing like with both of these, with your program messed up like this. the way they're reacting, you're destabilizing. And
which makes him angry. He's not happy about that. So that's when he hyposprays her so that now she's her whole upper body as well as her lower body.
She's just laying there. She can't move her face or her head. She can only speak. She
can't even talk. No, she can't talk either.
Oh, she couldn't even talk. That's right.
Remember that? He's like, now he goes, quiet or else I'll cut your tongue out. I mean, he's so bad right now.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And that's when he heads down the hall. And that's where he starts following Sue Henley, the ensign.
Yes.
Yes. And you feel like, oh boy, he's going after this ensign. And they get into the turbolift together. And she says deck 10,
mm-hmm.
says deck 14. And then Paris joins. First time we've seen Tom Paris in the episode.
Yeah.
Pops into the turbolift.
Yeah, nice casual scene with you. Very happy-go-lucky Tom Paris. And he's like, hey, Doc, what's up? And you notice.
You could see the doctor sort of turned away.
Yeah, like hiding Tom, his face. Yeah.
And Tom's not really looking at him much either. He keeps sort of, it's that elevator etiquette where nobody kind of looks at each other.
Yes.
Everybody's just sort of looking around and talking words, but not really looking at each other. And then Tom's like, well, great talk. doesn't notice that it's evil Doc.
Yeah.
And Sue Henley and Paris both step off. So
You saved Ensign Sue. It was you that saved her from being what do you think he was about to do to her?
I think he was gonna take her hostage. I think he was gonna
grab her or fondle her or something because he kept staring down at her posterior. That's what I noticed. He was just he was checking out her bum the entire time.
Wow.
Down the hallway and inside the turbo lift, and it looked like he was trying to restrain himself, like, no, I can't do this. And then he kept looking down. And the other thing is, this entire time, I'm watching the doctor. All I can think about is Tuvok from the episode where he basically does the mind meld with Suter. The episode Meld.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? And he turns evil and he's guess where he's at? He's evil in sickbay. He has that force field around
him.
Or he tells Janeway, you make me sick. You disgust me. And it's the same thing. It's the mirror universe evil version of Tuvok in Meld. And now you see the evil bad version of the doctor in this episode.
Yeah.
So that's what I was thinking about the entire time I was watching the doctor.
Well, he doesn't get Sue Henley. So
no.
He's saved, thanks to Tom Paris.
Yeah.
And the doctor goes to his deck, gets off, and heads into the holodeck. We're not sure what his next move is, but...
Oh, no, we do know what his next move is. Remember that? Because after he tries to get the information from Torres, she says, I'm not going to help you, right? In a really restrained, kind of almost Klingon-sounding voice that she had. She goes, I'm not going to help you. And he's like, fine, I will find out the answers from my progenitors. So he decides...
Oh, that's right.
That he's going to go to the historical figures.
Socrates and Gandhi and Tapao and everybody. That's right.
See how
he's going into the holodeck.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Now we go down to the planet and Tuvok is interrogating Nakan. And Chakotay carries Zaheer in, who's taking this fall. This was the moment I was like, really? The guy almost died. He fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
And now we're dragging him into the pub.
Because Zaheer is going to show them where the actual attack took place so they could have a real, get the precise readings and investigate, right? But you're right. It's like, wait a minute, dude, you just fell off a cliff and here you are. You're just walking in. You've got a couple of nicks here and there, right?
Yeah.
All right.
But he's going to show them. Yeah, he's going to take them to the attack site.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then we go to sick bay.
Oh, did you say that Tuvok was interrogating Nakan at first?
Yes.
Did you say that? Okay.
Starts with that interrogation, doesn't get much, and Chakotay shows up, and they're like, well, we're going to go to the attack site.
Yes.
And then we go to sick bay.
Yeah.
And Kes sees B'Elanna unconscious, tries to activate the doctor. Kes, calls for the doctor, and the computer says, well, that program's already running. And she says, where is the doctor? What's his location? Well, he's currently running in Holodeck 1.
Yeah.
And so Kes goes running down to Holodeck 1. And when she runs inside, we see Gandhi with his head spinning around like a crazy guy. It was out of The Exorcist or something.
She
looks over and T'Pol is like fritzing and, not working. And then who was it on the floor?
Socrates was like only his upper torso was left. Yeah. So. It looks like the evil doctor has gone on a rampage. When he can't find the answers that he needs, he ends up just messing up the historical figure to the point of Yeah. Let's face it. He's basically killing them in a way.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying?
Disfiguring them.
Disfiguring them. Like, yes.
Mm-hmm. So the doc is there, and he and Kes, he runs in. You know, Kes runs into him, mm-hmm. and he's like, he wants some excitement.
Yeah.
So funny because it's like an extreme version of what Kes was expressing before. It's like,
yeah,
you know, I want mm-hmm. It's all passion and
right.
And excitement and
right.
selfishness and self-absorbed and just me, me, me. And
yeah.
Anyway, he grabs Kes.
He kidnaps her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He says, let's go. He takes her to the transporter room. He walks in and we see my stand-in, John Tampoya, operating the transporter pad and basically just phasers him.
And John Tampoya does his own stunt.
Yeah, he does.
He does his own stunt. Yeah, he yanks him and throws him on the floor.
Boy,
it disappears behind the console. It was great. John did a great job.
He did. So he's going to escape from Voyager and take Kes with him. Mm-hmm. This entire time, Kes is pleading with him, trying to use logic in a way to try to just convince him that what he's doing is wrong. And the doctor is always coming back and just saying that, you know, no, this is what has to happen.
Well, it has to happen because he says that doctor is weak, that I've got to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
And Kes is going, he's still inside you. Like, yeah. you know, there is good inside of you. There's empathy and there's good, you know, light inside of you. And he's like, no, I don't want
that. That's later. Cause we have to, but
yeah, right. she does expand on that later, mm-hmm. but she starts to talk about that here. You know,
right. This is the beginning of that conversation. Cause we then jump to the bridge where we see Harry, he detects that there is an unscheduled transport taking place in transporter room 3. And also there's a scattering field that is masked at the location of where they've transported to. So we're not sure where they've gone to.
Yep.
That's when we jump to the planet surface, and Chakotay and Tuvok are with Zaheer at the place of the attack. Tuvok's scans have shown that the doctor was the one
there's the holographic signature. And they know that it was the doctor.
Right. And they tell this to Janeway. Janeway's just like, what? The doctor? She doesn't know what's happening. Then we flash to the lodge. This is where the doctor is transported with Kes. They're back at the lodge because they're waiting for Nakan and Nakan's ship or plans, you know, to get the doctor off this world.
Mm-hmm.
So the doctor is tinkering with his mobile emitter. He gets angry. He starts hitting it. And then Kes runs in. He's like, stop, stop, stop. And the evil doctor takes pause and he's like, wait, you care about me or do you care about him? You know, and then this whole mm-hmm. conversation begins, this philosophical conversation. The doctor thinks that he deserves to exist. The evil doctor deserves to exist more than regular doctor because mm-hmm. darkness is more fundamental than light. And Kes starts talking about empathy and kindness here and that cooperation and understanding are truly the essential qualities to life as we know it, because everything mm-hmm. that we have today, or at least everything that has benefited society
has come from cooperation. She says,
she
says mm-hmm. families wouldn't exist, societies wouldn't exist without cooperation and understanding.
Right.
And that empathy and kindness are basic to every form of life.
That's right.
And they have this wonderful, you know, Joe Manosky did a great job of scripting the scene because there's some big, big ideas and they're sort of debating light and dark here.
Yes.
And the two sides of the doctor, when suddenly Nakan comes in and says, hey, doc, sorry, Janeway's cordoned off the whole area. You're not going to get out of here. I did what I said. You know, I got you a ship, but you're not going to get out of here.
And pay me. He says, pay me.
And pay me. Exactly.
See, that's what got him punched. If Nakan didn't say, Nakan should just came in and said, hey, I set it up, but it's not going to work. And then left, he would have been fine.
Yeah.
But he said, pay me. And that's when the doc backhands him, knocks him back. And says, I'm going to kill you. And that's when Nakan says, well, if there's going to be one person who dies today, it's not going to be me. And he runs really quickly out of the lodge.
Yeah. Yep. And then we go to the woods and Tuvok and Chakotay are there with Zaheer.
Mm-hmm.
And Doc and Kes are running through the woods. So we see a bit of a chase starting.
Yeah.
Doctor and Kes are trying to hide because he doesn't feel like he can escape since the ship and any escape route is cordoned off.
Yeah.
So they're being tracked.
Yep.
And they end up by some cliffs, some other cliffs here. And then Chakotay and Tuvok have caught up to them. They shoot a phaser and it collapses. All these rocks come crashing down
in front of them. They can't go further on the path.
Exactly. It blocks their path and they're stuck on the side of the cliff with rocks on one side or Tuvok and Chakotay on the other with phasers drawn. Mm-hmm. And he's degrading, you know, the doc is fritzing here and they say, turn off the scattering field. We'll beam you back. We'll, you know, get you fixed.
Yeah.
And he said that he was taking Kes for her own good. Mm-hmm. And Kes says, you know, doctor, you've twisted and suppressed everything that's good inside of you. And as they're having this talk and they're stuck there, they both fall off. I don't remember.
No, exactly. He takes her. Cause like she tries to talk reason to evil doctor. And finally evil doctor says, Nope, I'm not having it like that. And I'm taking you with me. And literally in his mind, taking him as in like no one else
jumps
can
off
have
the
you.
Cliff. He jumps off the cliff.
He jumps.
They don't fall. Okay.
No, they don't fall. He grabs her and jumps off, and much to the shock of everybody standing there. But thank God, Janeway basically beams both of them aboard. Now this is the confusing part.
I agree. I was about to say,
why is the doctor totally normal and himself? He should still be the evil doctor when he's beamed aboard. But I'm guessing the subroutine had degraded so much to the point that it had dissipated on its own. But then
it was very
really
confusing. This is the biggest hole in the episode to me. Yes. Two things happening here. So they're falling midair, and you see a beautiful shot of them. It's kind of going down with them. The camera's flying past the rocks as they're both falling backwards with their arms, you know.
Yeah.
Spread wide. And then when they're beamed out of that fall, mid-fall, they land, both of them standing up with their arms by their side in the transport. I'm like, wait a minute.
They should not be in that position.
They should be falling or hitting the ground or I don't know. First of all, that was my first problem. And then second, he was totally the nice guy. It was good doctor. And I was like, what happened to bad evil doc?
Yeah.
There was no explanation of that. And I went back and rewound it a little bit and I didn't hear anybody address that. So that to me was a huge, it just jumped. It's just like, ignored.
And also there clearly could not have been a scene that hit the cutting room floor either, because are you going to have a scene while they're falling where he realizes, you know, the good doctor takes over evil doctor and becomes the, you know, that's not going to happen. Right?
I mean, the only thing that I could imagine, and this is just me imagining, is that they had figured out how to reprogram his, you know, what Valana said was, if we can turn you off and reboot you, I've got this thing that'll get rid of all the darkness, all of the bad algorithms.
Yeah.
Maybe they had that ready to go. So once they transported him, it just instantly sort of rebooted him back to, I don't know. It was confusing.
It's a mystery. It's a true mystery. We don't know. We don't know.
Yeah, because we do go to sick bay right after this, and B'Elanna says she has deleted all those added subroutines and that he is fine. He's back to normal.
But that sounds like she just did that now.
I know.
After
that's
he's
what
been
I mean.
Beamed back, not that she did it while he was falling. Right. So strange.
Yeah. Strange. I agree. She also says that she's fine too, that she's feeling better from the salad she ate or whatever was going on.
You know, your future wife is very forgiving.
I mean, very like, forgiving,
yeah. She kind of she shrugged that whole thing off like it was nothing. And I think that, you know, her Klingon side would be a little bit still pissed off with Evil Doctor, what he did to her.
Yeah.
But she's okay with it, right? So she takes off. Kes comes in. And the doctor now expresses that he is pleased that Kes has decided to remain on board, which shows that he cares, deeply for Kes.
Yes.
And Kes always says, also says that, you know, that she cares for him by saying that I would have missed you too if I left. And she walks away. And then he quotes a condensed version of the Hippocratic Oath.
Right before that, one of the last things he says that I really loved in the dialogue, basically he says, if she's changing, then being around those who love and know her best is the best place. I think Kes's line, but she's like, if I'm changing, she's decided being around those who love and know her best is important.
Is the best place.
And I thought that was a really sweet way to sort of, you know, there wasn't a big long goodbye with, you know, Zaheer and all that, but you realize that she's really thought this through and decided that Voyager's where she belongs for now. So
yes, yeah, exactly.
And then the doctor does his Hippocratic oath, which I thought was really, really great. It was a great little touch.
And I looked it up online. It's a long oath. That's a very shortened, condensed version of the real Hippocratic.
I have a vague memory that actually that was Bob's idea, and I could be wrong, but I think that the Hippocratic Oath tag at the end might have been Bob's idea, maybe.
I'll text him. I'll ask him
that. I would be curious to know if that's true, because I feel like I really liked it.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
All righty. So what is your theme or lesson from this episode, Darkling?
This was a tricky one. This was a tricky one to me. But I think basically for me, the theme of this episode is that nature will always evolve towards light, towards the good, towards love, basically.
That
both these things, the light and the dark, exist in our world. We all have those inside of us. They're all around us, but that nature is sort of working its way towards a place of empathy and connection and love and lightness. That's the theme that I got from this.
Yeah, that's the same lesson that I received. Very similar. And it's from that speech between Kes and the doctor when they're down in the lodge, about empathy, kindness, cooperation, and understanding being essential to all human life or all life that we know. Right. Yeah. So that is also my lesson to be learned.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, even though it's an imperfect episode, I really had fun watching it. I thought Bob did a great job. He was so good. And the guest stars were really, really strong. Mm-hmm. And it was and a lot of big ideas, you know, which is what Star Trek does so well, better than any other show I know. It really is able to delve into these kind of philosophical human experience ideas in a cool way. So, yeah.
Which makes it must-watch television.
That's right.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in for this week's episode, Darkling. Robbie and I will be reviewing the episode Rise next week. So join us next week.
See you then.